This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The unprecedented and catastrophic bushfires in Australia have killed more than 25 people. It's burned hundreds of thousands of hectares of land. It's caused massive devastation to wildlife, ecosystems and the environment, and destroyed hundreds of homes. And even as the world tries to grapple with the enormity of the crisis, Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison has been facing mounting criticism over his government's climate policies and their handling of the crisis. And even now, a new misinformation campaign has also been spreading around the claim that the bushfire crisis is the fault of arsonists, downplaying the role of climate change in the emergency. So joining me now on the line from Australia is Christine Milne. She's a former senator for Tasmania, and she's also the former leader of the Australian Greens. To sort of give us a 411 on the crisis. Hello, Christine. How are you today?
Hi, Juliet. I'm personally well, but I'm just overwhelmed by the enormity of the crisis that's affecting our country right now.
Yes, I mean, we're just, you know, reading those horrifying headlines, you know, close to 30 people dying, 500 million animals killed, they suspect may go extinct, damage the economy. I mean, it's so much to take in. I can't even imagine how you guys are doing it. But can you help put in perspective what is happening?
Yes, certainly. Australia had been suffering from an extreme drought and a very hot year. The Bureau of Meteorology has just declared 2019 as being the hottest year on record. But at the same time as we're suffering from the drought, the monsoon was delayed in the north, and the Indian Ocean dipole was in a positive phase, therefore sending hot, dry conditions across Australia. So we had a triple whammy, if you like, in terms of climate-related events. So global warming has absolutely driven the intensity of this crisis. Mm. And so when the fires started, we're accustomed to bushfires in Australia at this time of the year, but we have never experienced anything like this. First of all, the scale. Fires started burning in Queensland, then in New South Wales and down the coast, and in Victoria. And today, as I'm talking to you, helicopters are evacuating people from the Gippsland area of Victoria. And there's a real fear that this huge fires burning in New South Wales and Victoria will actually join. They're coming very close together. And if that happens, you'll just have a mega fire across the remaining forests. We now have 8.4 million hectares of Australia that has been burnt. That's an area larger than Scotland.
My goodness.
Just in New South Wales alone, an area as large as the Netherlands has been burnt. Mm-hmm. They estimate at least a billion native animals, birds, have died, and people are finding, you know, birds incinerated in the air, birds lost their wings, you know, it's unbelievable. And even wet forests that have never burnt before, have never evolved to be able to deal with fire, have burnt, and even bogs, wet bogs. Some of the bogs in the Kosciuszko National Park, for example, had dried out and they burnt, of course, but even wet bogs have burnt. So we are seeing the absolute wipeout of ecosystems and therefore habitat for a range of native species, from frogs and reptiles through to the mammals and birds and billions of insects. And so people have now come to realise that when the fires stop, it's never going to go back to how it was before. There are permanent changes that global warming has driven to the point where we have to realise that we have to adapt in ways perhaps we never thought of. In terms of the human population, as you rightly said, we're up to, I think, 29 people have died, including 3 volunteer firefighters, and just the power of these fires. Mm-hmm. 2 of the firefighters were killed when a weather event, the winds that were generated by the enormity of the fire itself, picked up and turned over a 10-ton truck. Oh, and firefighters were in the truck, and so they died when the firestorm actually picked up the truck and tipped it over. It's hard to imagine the enormity of that. So whereas before, communities would sometimes decide to stay and fight the fire, mm-hmm. there's no way you can stay and fight a fire of this intensity. And we've never had a situation before where whole communities have been told to go down to the beach and yeah. wait there. Mm-hmm. And when the fire trucks set off their horns and their alarm systems, go into the water. 4,000 people in a town were told to get down to the beach and wait for the signal and go into the water. And, of course, not only is there enormous fear associated with that, but the fires suck the oxygen out of the air. Mm-hmm. And you've got people suffering enormous respiratory problems, and the hospitals and emergency clinics are set up for people who are suffering from respiratory illnesses and the high levels of particulate matter yeah. in the atmosphere. So it is apocalyptic. That's the only way I can describe it.
And it's something that you said, you know, Australia has never actually seen a crisis of this scale in recent times, has it?
No, that's right. And we've had, as I said, we've had fires before, but they've tended to be in one place or another. Mm-hmm. Now we've got it right up the east coast of Australia, around to South Australia, and Western Australia's also had severe fires as well. Tasmania, where I live, had enormous fires last year. Mm-hmm. We are bracing ourselves because we are tinder dry as well. So it is a terrifying time and a real insight. And this is with 1 degree of warming. And just imagine what it will be like. We are already losing our ecosystems mm-hmm. with 1 degree of warming and species going to extinction. Imagine how this continent, so vulnerable to global warming, will be mm-hmm. If we continue to drive global warming towards the 3 degrees that we're on track for.
Yeah, and, you know, scientists won't even have the time to sort of, you know, take into to investigate, you know, the effects of this crisis before we're probably hit by the next crisis, you know, at the rate that we're going.
That's right. And that's what people are basically saying, that there's enormous frustration and anger in Australia, that this is not something that should have been unexpected. Mm. Back in 2009, scientists were saying that by 2020, unless emissions come down, we will see many more extremely hot days, many more extreme bushfire events and conditions. They were anticipating exactly what has happened now, and we have had successive, particularly Liberal Party, Liberal National Party governments that back the coal industry, back the gas industry and deny global warming, and therefore have defunded the National Climate Change Adaptation Facility, for example, which was doing a lot of the work on anticipating the disaster response you'd have in the face of extreme weather events.
That's right.
These things have been disbanded. So when we had finally the military brought in the last week or so, when people have been calling out for the support of the military to bring in supplies, evacuate people and so on, you know, the government didn't have the plans well enough organised. So when they told people to evacuate the south coast of New South Wales, they didn't have traffic police, for example, down there. So you had hundreds of thousands of cars and people. They had no one on duty to make sure that petrol stations were open so that people could access fuel to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, if you actually have a disaster management plan, yeah, you would have those things in place, but the government hasn't mm-hmm. because denying global warming means they refuse to accept the reality of what it means.
Yeah, you know, one of the headlines that caught my attention was that as Australia burns, its leaders are still clinging to coal. I mean, and that is still actually happening, isn't it?
Absolutely. In fact, Scott Morrison, our Prime Minister, went to Hawaii even on a holiday, yes. even though Australia was on fire.
Yep.
And he said he went on his holiday because he had to cut short the holidays in January because he was going to India. And the whole trip to India is to promote the export sales of coal. So here you had the country on fire and the Prime Minister about to set off to India to back Adani's mine in the Galilee Basin in Queensland and to try to sell coal. Fortunately, he's now cancelled his trip because it would be shocking PR value for him to go, but it doesn't mean he's changed his mind. And that's where we now have this absolutely ridiculous spate of conspiracy theories. And the Prime Minister is every day on the radio and TV saying he wants to investigate fuel hazard reduction burns and vegetation management. And that's just part of a conspiracy theory to blame environmentalists and conservationists for the national parks we have instead of having to acknowledge global warming. So it's absolutely a tactic to deflect from the reality of his failure and the failure of successive governments in Australia to address global warming.
That's right. So I was reading that the social media users, they've been blaming environmentalists for blocking hazard reduction burns to reduce wildfire risk. I mean, could you explain that for us?
Yes, and it's simply not true. So this is the fire services have a policy in the off-season when it's wet and wetter and safe of creating fire trails and keeping areas, roads, fire road access roads and things open so that when the fire season comes, they have blocks, if you like, fire blocks, hazard reduction areas to save large population centres.
Right.
Now, what the government is trying to say is that conservationists have tried to stop the fire services from actually bulldozing those hazard reduction corridors. In fact, it's not true. And the fire chiefs and the police chiefs have all come out and said it's not true. And they've said the reason they haven't been able to do some of the hazard reduction burns and along some of those areas to keep it open is because the weather patterns, there is less and less time between extreme weather events when it would be safe to light a controlled burn. And so they're saying it's nothing to do with environmentalists, nothing to do with conservationists, it's everything to do with the weather. They're just, it's becoming less and less time is available each year when it's safe until the point will be when there'll be no time it's safe to be lighting fires. So it's just a complete fabrication. And it's being put about by the Murdoch media in particular, and it is being driven by bots and trolls and so on. And University of Technology in Queensland is doing some analysis on what is the focal point that is driving this social media campaign through Facebook and via the Murdoch media. Who is actually behind creating these conspiracy theories to distract from the realities of global warming and try and stop people talk about global warming? And we don't have an answer to that yet, but I have no doubt it's associated with the conservative side of politics because it's coming out of the US as well. Republicans are feeding into that social media campaign in Australia. And I think we'll when eventually it's told, it'll be a well coordinated response from the conservative side of politics.
And I mean, it's not the first time we've seen environmental groups being baselessly blamed for fires. I mean, amid the surge of fires in Amazon, for example, the Brazilian president, you know, said with absolutely no evidence that environmental activists were starting the blazes as well.
Exactly. And interestingly, the Australian fires, in terms of you asked about comparative scale, the Australian fires have burnt an area larger than the Amazon fires and the Californian fires combined.
That's right. Yeah.
It's huge. So, yes, the same forces that want to deny global warming and continue the activities of the logging industry and the mining industry are the ones who blame conservationists and arsonists. Now, of course, there are always arsonists, but the police are saying in all the states in Australia where there are large fires that arsonists have not been the major contributing factor. It has been the intensity of global warming, the dryness of the vegetation, and dry lightning has been one of the major instigators, or, you know, is why these fires are igniting, particularly in alpine areas. And tragically, that is the case.
Yeah, and I mean, and that is something I wanted to talk about, you know, that false claim that this is that this big wave of arson is driving Australia's raging bushfires. I mean, that's gone viral on social media this week. And I think it's particularly among climate skeptics. Am I correct? Grasping sort of like for a counter narrative about the wildfire disaster.
Exactly. That counter narrative is two things. One, it's arsonists. Two, it's conservationists and environmentalists who allegedly have stopped the hazard reduction burning. Mm. In both cases, it's absolutely false. There's no evidence for it. And it's been denied emphatically by the fire services and the police. And in fact, in the last 24 hours, the Victorian Fire Service is saying that these, the later these fires in Victoria, there is no evidence that it's arsonists, that it absolutely is dry lightning, and that's and the absolute dryness of the environment. The whole vegetation is it's just tinder dry.
Yeah. And why do you think this arson emergency talking point suddenly surged? I mean, there's suddenly like a concerted effort almost, isn't it, to push it?
Yes, it started about 3 weeks. I mean, it's always been there, right back in 2009 when we had the Black Saturday fires in Victoria. Right. I was in the Australian Senate at the time, and one of the Conservative senators then accused me of being an extreme green arsonist because I had campaigned for the protection of forests in national parks in Victoria. And, of course, some of the forests got on fire. And so, you know, this ridiculous narrative has always been there from the far right. But it is concerted. This time it's organised, it's being pushed, it's paid for. We think it's coming from a particular public relations agency associated with the Conservatives. Mm-hmm. We can't prove that yet, but we're having a good look at it.
Okay. And another thing I wanted to talk about was some other responses where I read that the timber industry, they've actually proposed to allow some logging in national parks and on other public land to reduce bushfire risk. I mean, what is that all about?
That is simply about trying to use a catastrophe to advance the cause of the native forest industry. The scientists have made it very clear that actually logging and thinning vegetation in an intact forest makes it more fire prone. If you have a native forest, particularly a temperate and wet forest, that is intact, it is more likely to hold its moisture than if you open up that forest, take out particular trees, and you let that, by thinning it out, you allow for greater penetration of fire. And
that's right.
That is what the scientists have been saying. But the logging industry, of course, desperately wants to get this message out, because after the fires, it wants to log whatever is left. There'll be this narrative in Australia that the way to protect communities is basically to log and clear every bit of standing vegetation so that people's houses won't burn down. The fact that they'll be surrounded, you know, they'll be living on a virtually on a heat island is ridiculous, but that is part of their narrative. And just as an example of how ridiculous it is, the town of Eden in Australia has a wood chip mill, a mega pile of wood chips from the logging and chipping of native forests. It is surrounded by managed forests, by plantations. So if the logging industry was so good at managing their forests to minimise fire, then you wouldn't have had the catastrophe that is Eden at the moment, where the fire just went absolutely straight through those plantations, caught the wood chip mill, and the wood chip pile is now on fire. And experts are saying that it will probably burn for another 2 or 3 months.
Oh
my So
God.
Instead of going on with this nonsense about opening up national parks for logging, what we have to think about is how do we maintain the vegetation as habitat for the remaining native species, because Australia's had a pretty poor record in terms of driving species to extinction as a result of land clearance, logging, mining and the like. Now we've had this incredible catastrophe, a billion animals dead, People have been fantastic in going out and trying to rescue wildlife. Some really heartfelt images. I don't know if you saw the one of a koala approaching cyclists.
I did,
and they
yeah.
got off the bike and gave the koala some water. Mm-hmm. People seeing these stranded animals and picking them up. And also there was a video footage of a woman who pulled her shirt off to rescue a koala that was burning in the bush. Mm-hmm. People are trying desperately to save native animals because we all – Australia has so many species that are endemic to this country, found nowhere else in the world.
That's right.
And there is a real fear that what defines who we are, which is a large, in large part, is our natural environment, is now devastated by the fires. And so we have to do what we can to preserve the habitat to enable some of these species to recover if they do.
And I wanted to just talk a little bit also about the community's response. I mean, we've spoken about how the Australian PM and also the government, their response has been far from inspiring. But the community, you know, I was reading that Australia's firefighting force is largely made up of volunteers, you know, many of whom have had to forgo weeks of work at their regular jobs to fight the blazes, you know, and people are coming together. And I know there's a lot of anger towards the Prime Minister and his government as well. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. There's a huge amount of anger. But before I get to that, the community response in Australia has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. People have just given so generously that some of the charities and organisations that are managing the donations of clothes and food and, you know, household goods and things have had to say, stop, we just simply cannot manage the volume that people have been generously giving. You hear stories of people who stayed behind when their neighbours were evacuated, trying to look after their own and two or three other properties, volunteer firefighters out saving other people's properties and their own homes have burnt down. Just in the evacuation centres, the courage and the just the humanity, the decency of people coming together, supporting each other, looking after one another, mm-hmm. trying to entertain the children, to keep them positive. You know, it is inspiring to see the human spirit mm-hmm. that has been shown by communities. But people are angry with the Prime Minister and the government for their failure to have prepared for this. So just as another example, which people mightn't think about, but water purifying plants, for example, are mainly powered by electricity. Mm-hmm. As a result of the fires going through and the electricity being down, those water purifying facilities can't operate. So people are being told not to drink the water or to boil water, which is ineffectual in some cases in terms of making it clean enough for human consumption. Right. So people are now faced with these scenarios where the government should have anticipated them. We should have been asking for help long before it was eventually brought in. The army, for example, should have been mobilised much earlier. Mm-hmm. There are stories that the United States has offered water bombing aircraft that they can mobilise within a day, but the Australian government hasn't requested them. Now, for the life of me, I can't understand
why
you would not take up those kinds of offers, but we've got volunteers from the United States, volunteer firefighters from New Zealand, and hundreds of thousands of volunteer firefighters in Australia. But again, they're saying that their equipment isn't as good as it could be in many cases, mm-hmm. and that should have been a government responsibility. But instead of that, in recent years, state governments have cut back the budgets to support the volunteer fire service. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things people are going to be insisting on now, that if they're prepared to risk their lives to go out and fight fires, the least the government can do is provide them with the equipment that is up to the task, because hoses, some of the equipment people have been using are just so inadequate in the face of these fires.
Mm-hmm. So it's just a clear case of, you know, ignoring the scientists, ignoring the environmentalists, the conservationists, you know, ignoring everything that was there, the information that was there, and now facing the crisis and still wanting to cling on to coal and, you know, not wanting to challenge the powerful coal mining industry. It sounds like that's what it is to me.
Absolutely, and that is exactly the case, that the government is determined to run the narrative that they are not going to allow people talking about climate change to take the jobs of coal miners and the gas industry in Australia, when in reality those jobs are going anyway because of automation. Most of those vested interests in the fossil fuel industry are moving as rapidly as possible to automated trucks, automated drills, automated trains, to the point where they're saying they want autonomous mines from pit to port. So you have the government basically acting on behalf of the very wealthy vested interests who own the coal corporations, mm-hmm. pretending they're concerned about the workers, but the workers are going to be replaced by automation anyway, and some of the big mines in Australia are already run from computer centres in Brisbane and Perth, running mines way up in the Kimberley, way out in central Queensland. So that is the reality, and so we're going to have a serious conversation in Australia about this nonsense that you have to have coal mines to employ people, because it's the equivalent of the tobacco industry or the asbestos industry. It cannot go on. The IPCC has made it clear that we have less than 10 years mm-hmm. to get global emissions to turn around and start coming down. We cannot continue to burn fossil fuels, and we cannot continue to extract coal and oil and gas reserves that are in the ground. They have to stay in the ground. And if there's one thing this catastrophe has demonstrated, is that we really need to get onto what people describe as a war footing. Mm. It's a bad analysis in terms of conflict, but it's a good analysis in terms of organisation to respond to the climate crisis.
Preparedness, right?
Yes, absolutely. Anticipate and prepare and adapt, whilst at the same time mitigating to make sure it doesn't get worse.
Mm. And, you know, just going on what you were saying about, you know, coal mining and employment, I was reading a tweet which said that coal mining employs about 38,000 people in Australia, but tourism actually employs about 924,000 people. And, you know, the person was saying that climate-driven fires mean hotel rooms are sitting empty, cafe meals are not eaten, tours are not taken, you know. You know, what this person was saying was that the coal industry is actually suffocating the economy.
And that is largely true. And again, it comes down to something which I think is a very macho or, you know, old notional view, that the only real jobs for real men are driving trucks in mines, in the forest, you know, down the mine, on the farm, etc.
Right.
That work in the service industry or work with your brain mm-hmm. is somehow not as manly as physical work. And that has been sort of a long-standing cultural context, I suppose, and it has to change because it's just not true.
Yeah.
Tourism industry jobs have always been seen as peripheral jobs once the real jobs have been taken care of, when in fact those tourism and service industry jobs are incredibly important. And Queensland is totally conflicted because you've got more than 60,000 jobs associated with the Great Barrier Reef mm-hmm. and so few jobs related to coal, but the coal jobs are definitely killing the reef. The global warming is killing the reef, and coal jobs are driving that, and at the same time you're losing those tourism jobs because the reef is dying. Mm-hmm. So Australia is really, it really is the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, in a global sense of what happens when a country fails to face up to global warming and make the changes that are necessary. On the positive side, though, there has been, and it's one of the things that I put in place when I was in politics, the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, which I talked to you about last year.
That's right.
The Green Bank has driven incredible transformation in renewable energy. So there are lots of jobs and lots of investment now in renewable energy. And I saw your minister, Yobi Yin, making a statement just this week about Malaysia's transition to renewables and the jobs and economic prosperity that'll come from that. And that is absolutely the case. And we're a proven example in Australia where that is already happening.
And, you know, I think that is something that, I mean, the best thing, if you can say that, to come from this crisis, hopefully that the world sits up and realizes that the crisis is here. You know, this is what a climate crisis looks like.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing in Australia that before people have been confronted by fire, but we've never had a situation where the air quality in the capital in Canberra has been incredibly poor, 2 and 3 times beyond the hazard limits for people's health. The same in Sydney. So suddenly you've had millions of people impacted by the fires who haven't actually been on the fire front, and they're what the ones breathing this air full of particulate matter that is shocking for their health. So I think one of the things that's happened this time with this emergency on the scale it is that you can't escape from it. You can't go to your holiday house. You can't go to another place. As a friend of mine has her daughter who's pregnant in Canberra and is worried about the fact that, you know, you can go inside and you can shut the windows, but the smoke-filled air still penetrates the house. There is nowhere to escape. And suddenly Australia has had a dose of realizing that there's nowhere to go. Climate change affects everybody, and it's affecting everybody right now.
And it doesn't respect, you know, borders as such.
No, absolutely not. And while we're suffering the fires, Indonesia, of course, is suffering terrible floods. It's happening from one end of the planet to the other.
You know, the world has been responding to the crisis in many ways. But, you know, what would you suggest what lesson should we take away, and how can we help also the people of Australia in whatever way that we can?
Well, I think one of the best things that people can do in to help Australia is to urge the government of Malaysia or the government of whichever country they live in to absolutely put pressure on Australia to lift its greenhouse gas emission reduction targets, to play a much more proactive and supportive role in the global negotiations, because ultimately, Madrid was a failure this year, the UNFCCC COP. We absolutely, 2020 is the year where every country is meant to come to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change with new and higher levels of ambition.
That's right.
Now, Australia has said it will not do that. One of the best things you can do to help us is, of course, to put pressure on the Australian government to stop this climate denial and start making a serious global effort. Apart from that, there are lots of websites now with ways that you can support people who are affected, and, of course, ways that you can help communities trying to assist animals. There are lots of animal rescue websites now helping to try and look after burnt and injured animals to try and help us do what we can to recover. But at a global level, the climate emergency movement has been fantastic. The youth climate strikes have been fantastic. So I'll take this opportunity to thank the young people in Malaysia who've participated in those marches. It's been inspiring to see all those young people on there in their climate marches on Fridays everywhere across the planet. And I think the main thing is to get every country to declare a climate emergency and then think, well, what does it mean to be in an emergency? Look at Australia and realise this is where we need to mobilise the army. We need to think about supply chains for transport, for food, for water. We need to look at critical infrastructure. We need to start actually breaking it down to how will we manage personally as this crisis hits us.
All right. Thank you so much, Christine, for joining me today. I'm afraid we're running out of time, but we will keep in touch, of course, and look to you for some updates as well about what's happening.
Thank you, Juliet. It's lovely to speak to you.
I've been speaking to Christine Milne. She's the Global Greens Ambassador. She's a former Australian senator and also the former leader of the Australian Greens. And we were discussing Australia's bushfire crisis. And if you'd like to keep updated with what Christine is up to, you can always follow her on Twitter at Christine Milne. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.